So it's a privilege to have you here with us, dear Ashkan. Now the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Erdoğan. The privilege is mine. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much. Before I get started, please allow me to start with acknowledging the traditional owners and custodians of the lands on which I work and pay respect to Indigenous elders, past, present, and emerging. As Erdoğan mentioned correctly, today I'm going to talk about a 19th century Iranian figure named Mirza Mohammad Baqir Bawanati. I think, and he is a very good example of the intellectual milieu, the political milieu, and religious / theological milieu of the 19th century in the Middle East in general, in particular, and in Muslim majority countries in general. And he is an exemplary figure in the interjunction of multiple errands and multiple milieus. On the one hand, we can take a look at the names and the epithets and titles that he has chosen, or the people of his time gave him, to see how eccentric this figure is. Throughout his life, he has been known as Muhammad Baqir Bawanati, the place that he came from Bawanat, a small village in the southern part of Iran. And also he was known as Muhammad Baqir Khodayi, Muhammad Baqir Masihi, and some people of his own time give him the derogatory term Baqir Kufri, which means the heretic Baqir. Muhammad Baqir Masihi means the Christian Baqir, and Muhammad Baqir Khodayi means the divine Baqir, or the Baqir the theologian. So this shows his intellectual / spiritual journey throughout his life. This is very interesting. Despite his aridity and despite his incredible expanded knowledge about religious traditions of the time and languages, he spoke and wrote in a half dozen languages. He spoke in Persian, Arabic, English, and wrote in those languages and knew those languages very well. He also knew Hebrew and Latin and some Sanskrit very well. This is very exceptional in the 19th century Iran. So despite all these tremendous characteristics, we have almost nothing about him until 20 years ago in English. The only small things that we can find about him is an entry written by Iraj-e Afshar, who introduced him to Persian speakers and then English speakers, and introduced Bawanati for the first time. So he has written an entry in the Encyclopedia Iranica. And also about 20 years ago, Johann Strauss wrote a paper in which he traced Bawanati in the work of an Ottoman statesman and intellectual figure named Ahmad Medhat Efendi, who was familiar with Bawanati while both of them were in Baghdad in the late 1870s. Besides that, the only trace that we had in English from Bawanati goes back to Edward Brown, who was who died in 1926. And he mentioned Edward Brown he mentioned Bawanati in a couple of his works, such as Yes, such as poetry and press in modern Iran, or in his travel like a year amongst the Persians. So most of what we have known and what we have heard about Bhavanati in Persian literature was based on a short introduction given by two figures, one Edward Brown and two a late 19th century traveler and Nurbakhshi Darwish Iranian named Mirza Muhammad Ali Pirzadeh Naimi, who met with Bhavanati while both of them were in Beirut in late 1870s. When we hear about Bhavanati in the works of these two, one thing is common. Both Edward Brown and Muhammad Ali Pirzadeh acknowledged he's incredibly knowledgeable. Bhavanati is incredibly knowledgeable, and he is eccentric. And this is something that repeats in Persian literature. When everybody talks about Bhavanati, they say just, he is very sharp, he knew multiple languages, and he was the instructor of Edward Brown at Cambridge University. And that's all. And to be honest with you, that was my first encounter with Bhavanati as well. I came across him when I was working on Edward Brown in my dissertation. So I didn't hear from him from any other Persian research resource, which is kind of unfortunate and mind-blowing. So who is this guy? Today I will focus on a general introduction, a biographical introduction to this eccentric but very influential characteristic, very influential figure. And I also try to let's say undermine, if not overthrow, one common knowledge about him. Just to give you the starter. Edward Brown, based on a brief note on the cover of one of Bhavanati's work published in London, we will talk about it, we will get into that. Edward Brown believes that Bhavanati was about to found a self-styled religion called Islamo-Christianity. And that is what Bhavanati was known among all those who have heard about him. Today, I'll try to give a brief biographical account of his life and show that this cannot be completely factually, historically valid. Bhavanati in this picture that you can see, Bhavanati is sitting in the far left, and it is good to take a look at the picture. On the far right, you can find Muhammad Ali Pirzadeh sitting on a chair in a dervish costume. On the far right, standing is his then teenager son, Bhavanati's teenager son, Ismail Baqir. Sitting in the middle is Sheikh Muhammad Abdu, probably the most famous student and disciple of Jamaluddin al-Afghani, and they were by far the most influential Muslim reformist of the 19th century. And on the top left standing is the young Ahmad Medhat Efendi. This picture was taken in the I think in the late 1870s in Beirut or early 1880s, very early 1880s. This belongs to the last years of Bavonati. And in this picture, we can find the what I call the interjunction of multiple venues. We can find the concept of Occidentalism in the works of Bavonati himself. We can take a look at his costume that he wore, the European style costume that he wore since his early 20s. And we can also see the tradition of Islamic reformism, both by Abdul Bavonati himself and Ahmad Medhat Efendi. And also we can see Pirzadeh as the representative of the Shiite Sufism in the picture. So this is, and they were all in one way and or another, the members of an association for rapprochement between Islam, Christianity, and Judaism while they were in Beirut. So, as I said, he was the crossroad of Islamic modernism and what we now know as pan-Islamism in the works of Al-Afghani. He was very fond of Al-Afghani throughout his life. And also, we can see the intense messianic and millenarian political movements in the works of Bavonati. Just remember that he was born in 1820. And just remember the millenarian, one of the most millenarian movements of the time in the 19th century in Iran, known as the Babi movement, or led by a young formerly Shiite cleric known as Sayyid Muhammad Ali Bab. So he, Bavonati, like Bab, has very intense and fervent messianic emotions and messianic thoughts in his youth. As I said, he, for a time during his 20s, he was known as Muhammad Baqir Masihi, the Christian Baqir. He called himself the Messiah while he was in Shiraz. The other thing is, we can see, as we will see later, he had multiple conversions into different institutionalized religious traditions throughout his life. So he could be a nice representative of the imagination of world religions. He could be an embodiment of an emerging, let's say, European Eurocentric discourse in the 19th century, discourse of world religions throughout his multiple conversions and his eventual reconversion to Islam. And also similar to Al-Afghani, he was an exemplary figure in double critique of despotism and imperialism. And as I've said, lots of exoticization is around his character, both among his fellow Iranians and among Orientalists such as Edward Brown. And because he spent 5 or 6 years in London and in Europe, he is a good example of what we now know as Occidentalism, an imagined body of knowledge about Europe. There are different terms about this phenomenon. Some scholars decide to be relatively more neutral. They call it Europology, and some other prefers other terminologies like invisible Occidentalism, or Orientalism in reverse. So this is in general about how people from other parts of the world other than Europe imagined Europe in the 19th century through their travelogues and their publications. Bhavanati published two of his works while he was in London, which shows how he imagined, how he encountered Europe and Russia at that period of time. So if I want to continue with the biographical remarks, I can say that Bhavanati was born in 1820 in a small village very close to Bhavanat. The name of the village is Sheidan. It was very close to Bhavanat, a district 2 hours, now 2 hours, 2 hours and a half driving from Shiraz. It's located in the southern Iran. He moved to Shiraz, of course, at that time, not by car. No, he didn't drive. He moved to Shiraz while he was 10 or 12, and he did it alone without letting his family know. And during his teenage years, he started his studies in a Shiite seminary in Shiraz. And for a while he was a teenager, apparently he used to put on Shiite clerics' costumes for a few years. Then in the 1830s, it was the heyday of British presence in the Persian Gulf, and Shiraz was in the vicinity of Persian Gulf in a way, very close to Persian Gulf. So it was the crossroad of imperial venues and imperial dispatch and so on and so forth. So he came to see a lot of British officials and officers during that time in Shiraz, and that was the beginning of his familiarity with English resources and English language. Apparently, he learned English first in Shiraz, then he traveled in his early 20s to India for the first time, and he completed his English over there. And by the late 1830s, he left the Shiite cleric customs and started to become a practicing dervish in Shiraz for a while. At this period of time, he called himself Muhammad Baqir Khodai, the Baqir the theologian, the theologian, or Baqir the divine. He traveled between Iran and India in his 20s and early 30s. In India, it is very interesting, and it tells us a lot about the expansion of discourse of world religions in the 19th century. He converted to Christianity, not in Iran, not in Europe, but in India. He came back from India. He lived in Bushehr next to Persian Gulf for a few years, and he worked in the British consulate in Bushehr, and he was in contact with British for a long time, and during that time he called himself Muhammad Baqir Masihi, or Ibrahim John Mu'attar, Abraham John the Fragrant. And by this self-given epithet, he plays with the word John, because John in Persian means soul, and he also named himself John after the apostle, Ibrahim John Mu'attar or Muhammad Baqir Masihi. By 1857, he called himself the manifestation of the Christ or Christ himself, and also the deputy of Mahdi in Shiraz. That was the heyday of the millenarian movement. Remember that 1844 coincided the 1,000 years after the occultation of the 12th Shiite Imam, and everybody was waiting for the Mahdi to come back at that period of time in Persian political and theological milieu. And that was the time that Bab came up on the scene as the deputy of the Mahdi. And it seems that for a short period of time, Bavanati came up as the deputy of Mahdi in Shiraz. And it made a huge noise in the city. He had some followers, a few followers among the Shia clerics, and he was in huge trouble. And as we know, based on the work of a certain Ni'matullahi Sufi in Shiraz, known as Ahmad Divan Beghi Shirazi, it seems that thanks to him, he could flee the city overnight. Otherwise, he would be killed because the clerics issued a fatwa against him. So after he fled Shiraz, he spent some time in Bushehr, and then he started traveling in India, Iraq, in Ottoman Empire in general, and he spent more than 20 years or 20 something years in general in travel. And it was exactly during this flight, this escape from Shiraz in 1858, while he was around 40, that he met with Jamaluddin Al-Afghani in Bushehr. Apparently, Al-Afghani was in a caravan in the way to Mecca, towards Mecca, and they met, and Bavanati had made a lot of noise over there in Bushehr as well. And this time, according to Muhammad Rashid Reza and Muhammad Abdo, it was Al-Afghani who saved his life. And then he went back to India and converted to Zoroastrianism over there for a while. For a period of time, he reconverted to Christianity. Then he wrote some works of Voltaire. He was disenchanted with Christianity and decided to become an agnostic, a Voltairean agnostic. And then when he traveled to Baghdad, he converted to Judaism for a while. And he only reconverted to Islam again when he traveled to Arabia in the middle of the 1860s. So we know that between 1869 and 1871, he was in Baghdad. And it was during that time that he met Ahmad Medhat Afandi over there. And between 1879 and 1844, he traveled to London, stayed over there, and published at least two books of poetry. One is known as Shomaiseye Landaniye, which means the London Sonnet. It's an ode in Persian. And the other is Sodeireye Nasutiye, which can be translated as this worldly small tree, and it has an intertextuality with the word sedre, which is a tree, and it was mentioned in the Quran. So he also, during that time while he was in London, he wrote a Quranic interpretation called Fouhat Anjomani va Nafahat Landani, it was a commentary in Persian and in poetry. And it took 3 or 4 months for him to complete the work. He wrote an interpretation on a few chapters of the Quran. And during that time, he also served as the associate for Wollaston in his production of Persian English Dictionary. While he was in London, he started the correspondence with Al-Afghani, and he became an association with Muslim reformists in Europe, which means Al-Afghani, and for a while Muhammad Abdo, those who published Al-Urwatul Wuthqa, one of the most famous pan-Islamist magazines of the latter half of the 19th century. So he wrote 3 letters between June and July 1884 to Al-Afghani, and you can see one of his letters that he had written in Arabic to Al-Afghani in 1884. And if you take a look at the bottom of the letter, you see that he signs in English as M. Baker of Persia, which we can see that he tries in a way to assimilate to English culture in this letter. And this is the way that he introduced himself. So it is good to say that here he was married while he was in Iran. He had a daughter and a son, two sons and one daughter while he was in London. And he lost one of his sons while he was in London, and he lost his wife, Shirin Jan Sabbagh, while he was in Boucher before he traveled to London. So he had a turbulent life while he stayed in Europe. He lost one of his children, and the other children, his daughter got depressed, and her ailment made him to travel from London to Beirut in order to help her feel better. But eventually her daughter also passed away in Beirut. He left London in 1884. Spent a few years in Beirut along with Muhammad Abdo and other Muslim reformists over there. And he eventually came back to Iran and started his work as a English language instructor for the royal palace in Iran. And because of his close connection with Al-Afghani, while Afghani was accused of assassination of Nasiruddin Shah, the emperor of Iran, he fled the country, and all of his associates and disciples were in trouble. Bawanati was not an exception. He was thrown in jail for a couple of years, and he was released from jail only 3 days before he passed away. So he died in 1892 or most probably 1893. What we know about him, apart from Edward Brown, is from Hadiqatu Shu'ara, as I've said, written by Ahmad Divanbegi Shirazi. It says part of his life in the 1850s. Also, Ahmad Medhat Efendi died in 1912, wrote his autobiography called The Exile, Menfa, and he says these stories about Bavanati. And unlike Brown and Divanbegi Shirazi and Haji Pirzadeh, Ahmad Medhat Efendi, despite he acknowledges that Bavanati was accused of insanity and he had bad temper and he had a violent and confrontational characteristic, but he was totally infatuated by his characteristics. And it is Ahmad Medhat Efendi that mentions that Bavanati was among the first Muslims who became a scholar of Vedas, the Hindu Vedas. And this is an exceptional piece of information that we know thanks to Medhat Efendi. We already discussed that Edward Brown was the first European or let's say Western figure that introduced Bavanati in his work. And this is, I think, the let's say gist of what we can know from Bavanati in all the works. He says that he is in every way a most remarkable man, and but he says, I never saw anyone who lived so entirely in a fantastic ideal world that he does. And also, we, thanks to the travelogue of Muhammad Ali Pirzadeh, died in 1903, we know some good information, some very helpful information about Bavanati. So one thing that we know thanks to Pirzadeh, and which is very interesting, that is throughout his life, Bavanati was, after his reconversion, Bavanati was a fervent Muslim proselytizer. And even in Beirut, he tried to proselytize Islam while he was not a practicing Muslim. That's one of the peculiarities of his character. He was fervent in proselytizing Islam. Maybe we can talk about it in the Q&A part in further detail, but based on what we know from Pirzadeh, he was not practicing, and he was not by any means a kind of conventional believing Muslim. He was not denominational. When he reconverted to Islam, he remained a non-sectarian Muslim throughout his life. And again, thanks to Muhammad Rashid Reza, in his biography of Muhammad Abdu, we have some information about the life of Bavanati while he was in the secretary of the Association for Rapprochement Between Islam, Christianity, and Judaism in Beirut. So I think I need to wrap up, but it would be remiss if we don't talk about it for a few minutes. This is what I briefly talked about. This is the cover of Shomaisi Landaniye, which was published in London in 1884. As you can see, he begins the title with the voice of Muhammad, Ad-Da'watul Muhammadiyya. And in the subtitle, we can see the term Islamo-Christianity. And this is what, based on which Edward Brown and after him, Iraj Afshar, thought or assumed that he was about to found a religion called Islamo-Christianity. But even if we take a look at this very book, we can, yeah, and it has a very intense, we can say, and very clear Christian theme in the aesthetics, without a doubt. But even in that work, he has written many lines in despise and in critique of Christian dogmatic theologies and the basic dogmas of Christianity. And at the same time, he wrote a term in that very book that can be translated as "the crust is broken and the pig is dead." So we will remain completely uncertain whether he was proselytizing Islam in a way that Christians in London can connect to that, or he was about to found a religion. Based on what we can see in the content of the London Sunset, it is highly unlikely that in this period of time, he was about to found a religion, despite that throughout his life, he had some prophetic feelings. Edward Brown unhesitatingly called him prophet, and some other scholars called him derogatorily, really kind of a self-styled prophet. So what we can see, this is the translation of a few lines of London Sunset in Edward Brown, Poetry and Press. And in this, in a very prophetic tone, and in he foresees the clashes between the British and Russia in the latter half of the 19th century, and he foresees and he predicts that in this, the Russian will triumph. But this is not the only part. The main part of this book has an incredibly and unmistakably Sufi content, what we can find in this work. And Edward Brown decided not to translate those parts that have a completely Sufi tone, Occidentalist tone. For example, when it says the Occident became the house of race thanks to the lights of the Orient. Or when he talks about the existence and intoxication of two worlds, creatures, were not but a burnt, crumbling leaf falling from a tree. Because Press and Poetry was a book of political history of Iran, Edward Brown decided not to translate some passages of the work that is a critical Christian dogma. So long story short, what I'm trying to conclude is it is highly unlikely that while Bhavanati was in London, he was about to found a new religion called Islamo-Christianity. Maybe the most plausible guess about the term Islamo-Christianity was the proselytization of Islam in a way that can connect to Christian audience, because if we have lots of reports that during that time he was a pro-Sufi or a Sufi-esque non-sectarian Muslim proselytizer in London, that he was hit by the mob for his proselytization. Thank you very much for your attention.